Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. Today, Facebook has a new mission statement. Mozilla wants to control the web, and Star Trek Discovery is about to launch. Let's go.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech. Check it out, man.
To all the killers and the $50 billers.
Wow. Please don't mess up this record.
Yeah. Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech, the show we break down tech news and nerd culture from a black and brown perspective. I'm Joe Brazel. That's Akili Shine. What's up, Akili?
Chilling, man.
We are listening to the sounds of
Prodigy from Mobb
Deep.
M-O-D-B.
R.I.P. Prodigy. One of the, I guess one of the most commercially slept on rappers, but not slept on rappers or groups. Mobb Deep is,
Hey, one of my favorite groups coming up.
Favorite.
It's one of the groups that influenced me to get into the game, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, because they were a duo. When I started doing music, I was in a duo.
Okay.
And, like, the way they kind of, like, went back and forth sometimes, the way they constructed their songs is how my duo constructed songs.
Yeah.
Our early records, we rapped over their beats.
Wow, yeah.
Like,
The beats are ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
And, Mobb Deep was, I'm just a little bit older than you, so my inspiration was more on the Run-DMC side for the back and forth. But, these guys, man. They're fantastic.
R.I.P. bro.
R.I.P. 42 years old. It's kind of a bummer.
Yep.
That's the same age as you. So.
Wow.
That
All right. Well, I brought my pistol too.
I shouldn't. That's the wrong place to make a joke. Is R.I.P. To a fantastic, talented brother and incredibly influential group. How you doing otherwise? How you doing this week?
I'm good, man. Just loving the summer, bro. Loving the sunshine and interesting stuff that's happening in the world. You know, technology, social media, with brand building, creativity. It's some interesting times, man.
Lots of interesting times going down with Facebook and others and people getting to the game. Vimeo getting to the game now. Getting to the creative game. Some stuff happening, but we'll get to that later. But right now, Mozilla is talking about trying to incentivize people to come up with ways to decentralize the web. They're offering a cool $2 million, which doesn't seem like enough money, but $2 million is if someone could figure out how to do a second internet, if you will. I guess this is the theory behind this. This is actually the plot line on Silicon Valley TV show. Mm-hmm. Theory behind this being, only a fraction of the world is actually connected via the internet. There's a lot more opportunity for people who aren't connected. And there's a theory if we can have this truly free space where everyone can have access to it and everyone can be globally connected, who knows? Everyone has the internet. It's available to everyone, but not everyone has access to it.
Yeah,
this could be a game changer. Someone can crack it.
Absolutely, especially when we talk about net neutrality and these ISPs trying to control the speed in which we even get internet. And most of the world doesn't even have the internet. I think this is a great incubator, crowdsourcing, strategy to be able to come up with something that's futuristic that is for all the people. Yeah. And I think that's amazing. That I mean, and you're right, $2 million is a little drop in the bucket, but I mean, it's enough to incentivize someone with a bright idea, you know what I'm saying? And I think that someone's going to create it.
It's interesting. If someone creates it, the whole point of creating it is though so that it's free and it's for everyone.
Democratized.
Mm-hmm. So it feels like if you're creating another internet, why would you set up a world where you can profit on it? Like, if I'm the creator of the internet, I want the internet residuals forever. Like, 2 million plus.
You want your publishing check on the internet?
I just want one eighth millionth of a penny off every search.
But that's like saying the person that invented the manuscript back in times of Egypt should be getting a check.
Royalties on every book, son.
Right.
Every book ever written.
I developed the spine of the book.
I mean, no. I see what you're saying. But I guess what the basic question of Mozilla is sort of funding this and doing this, and I mean, their motives seem 100% sort of altruistic, if you will, but maybe not. Maybe it is some backdoor profit motives in there. They're offering money.
Hey, I mean, they're in the game already. Of course, there might be. I mean, there has to be some type of acquisition, some type of rev share. I mean, if they're putting up money, that I would caution that they're doing it for free. But I love the fact that it's that, you know, we're in a time where we can crowdsource ideas and, you know, just really get into the meta thinking of how things are developed. And I think this is a great opportunity. It's an inward into a new landscape, you know what I'm right. saying? To like deconstruct the internet and build something that's even fresher. Right. Who knows what that could be? That's what's interesting. Like, I can't even conceptualize what that would be.
Yeah, it knows, but it's if we can, no one owns the internet, so, you know, why they did it once, let's do it again.
Man.
I mean, you're going to be, will you be surfing on Internet 1.0 or Internet 2, Internet 2.0?
I don't mess with the 1.0.
With your browser, like, you can be able to select when you're on a Chrome or a Safari or Firefox, which internet you want to be on.
Man, like, when
your computer fires up, you like click.
What's even more funny is, like, when I was in our lifetime, we laugh at the idea of the internet because we have something way better. Yeah, like, the internet. Yeah, it's like, so,
www? like a URL? Ha ha, URL. Remember we type URLs?
That'll be crazy.
Yeah, that's going to happen. Like, my granddad was typing in URLs like a jackass. Like, that's just going to happen.
Yeah.
It won't be even grandfather. Maybe sooner or later.
Man.
You know, like, your son will be like, Dad. Anyway, yeah. Moving on, speaking of making money on the internet, Mark Zuckerberg, the king of making money on the internet right now, the guy who cannot stop making money off all the bees, billions of people he has connected to his service, decides that he wants to change Facebook's mission. You know, obviously it was a place before where you just, you know, exchange photos of your ex-girlfriends and high school folks and shows what your kids are doing these days and blah, 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 blah. But it's grown into something that...
Behemoth.
...is way more powerful than that. And although Facebook has just felt like they just kept facilitating with better tools to do the same thing better, which is connect and share.
Yeah.
Now that they're in a place that he sort of feels like it's time to pivot and really make Facebook into something, in his words, that will give the people the power to build community and bring the world closer together.
I like it.
I mean, there's a lot of changes going on with Facebook. I mean, they built this incredible infrastructure, not only of a user base, but all kinds of ancillary technologies that are able to, you know, not only make money for their buyers and for themselves, but just, you know, really have different ways for people to connect and share. We saw over the years how, you know, absolutely transformative Facebook has been when it comes to, like, the Arab Spring and starting revolutions and spreading things. And obviously our election with the spreading of fake news, intentionally or unintentionally, all the way down to the recruitment of Al-Qaeda, I mean, of ISIS. So it's a very powerful tool. What ways do you think Mark Zuckerberg as the CEO and Facebook will do to change that to just, like, we're just back here, you know, doing that to providing tools to help grow the world and bring community closer? What do you think he means by that?
I mean, I think he means it exactly how he says it, like that the additional phrasing now. I mean, I think he's already in the process of doing that. He's already brought the world together on the platform with the various tools that he's developed. And I think having the specificity of a group bringing in smaller communities based on, you know, different causes that you might be have an affinity to, I think is very smart because, hey, that's how we as humans interact. We communicate, we engage, we need that social ability. And I think being that Facebook is the hub for all of that and you're able to be able to make money off of it, promote stuff, you're able to, you know, like you said, the usefulness of it is so many variations of it. I think that's the highlight of it. And the fact that almost 2 billion active users, that's almost a third of the world that actively use Facebook. So the fact that he is promoting that and putting that out, bullhorning that out, I think is great.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that you are kind of like you don't really feel Facebook like that. So what do you think about that?
I just believe what I see. I just think Zuckerberg is a real savvy sort of for-profit kind of guy who pivots to make these more socially conscious moves as a PR, as the press gets worse and as the climate for this sort of thing gets... he's in real danger here of getting such bad press with Facebook that... You know, he can't afford to go the way. They're too big now, but he can't afford to go the way of Friendster or any of these other failed social media things. So I think that
you got to clean that one up. Explain. I don't know what you mean.
What I mean by that is what I'm trying to articulate is, I believe that Zuckerberg is about making money and delivering ads and delivering users to his advertisers, full stop, period.
That's
it. He says, hey, I'm going to do something new. I'm actually going to build communities, and I don't believe a word of it. That's all. That's basically it. It's like, okay. But
so there's not
but I'm still going to make money on.
There's not an ounce of altruism and philanthropy back there?
I don't believe it. I really don't believe it. I think it's he's saying the right things and doing the right things, and it'll be a very good sort of PR spin on what they're doing and why they're doing it and why they're helping the world. I'm very, 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 very cynical when it comes to most Silicon Valley CEOs and how they roll and how sort of hypocritical they are, even in their liberalism.
That's the CEO.
In their elitism.
That's the culture of a CEO, though. You can't name a CEO that's not about that.
Well, when I say that, I just mean particularly Silicon Valley guys who sort of culturally are these guys who come like, do no evil, we're gonna do good.
Are you arguing that Facebook has done no good?
No, I'm not arguing Facebook has done no good. I'm arguing that Facebook in general by having this hands off, we're just a messenger, we're just a connector sort of approach, they remain complicit in all the things that they've help for good and for bad. More importantly, the spreading of fake news and this election, some other stuff they've
done. But isn't that like a small fraction of all the things that they've helped to promote in terms of goodness, goodwill, and collectivism?
I don't have a running tally.
but how you're framing this like that.
But what I'm saying is, at the end of that, Facebook, it's just like television in general. It's like magazines, radio, and television. Magazines, radio, and television are created as a delivery service for ads, full stop. The only reason those three mediums exist is a delivery service for ads.
That's right.
The reason why Facebook started was so people can share things. Why Facebook exists now is a delivery service of users and eyeballs.
But why is that a bad thing?
In exchange for money.
Why is that a bad thing? Why can I? Hold on. Let me talk.
Okay.
Why can I create a platform that delivers ads and still help people? Why can't I do it at the same time?
It's a fantastic notion. I think that's a fit and great sentiment. I just don't believe that that's what Zuckerberg's trying to do. I think he's saying he wants to do that because people are like, damn, you got all this power. What's Facebook? And frankly, he's saying all that because his main sort of like competitors, which are Bezos and Serge and those guys from Google and even Tim Cook, are so far up about how they're going to change the world and the good they're doing.
But they have changed.
They have the world. No, but the good they're doing, these people, blah, blah, blah. And Facebook's like, yeah, we're trying to get that money. So
I strongly disagree okay. Because I mean I feel like all these guys are in it to make money. Of course they are. Like,
sure,
that's they have a business. They have a business. So because I believe as I make money, even on a small level, I'm still be able to do my part and make change. And I feel that's what Facebook has done through the last 10 plus years. They've changed our culture of how we engage, how we interact. They changed everything. Like our dependency on the internet is completely different because of Facebook.
Sure.
So like, and I think there are some varying degrees as to what's been helpful, what's been hurtful. But I think I'm not going to blanketly say that he's just doing it for profit, and there's nothing back there that wants, no sentiment back there that wants to help people. Because I feel he's employed people. Like, sure. I mean, he's doing a lot of research and development in terms of all sorts of stuff that's going to open up more infrastructure, more jobs. Like, all that is helpful for community.
For sure. Those are all great points. And I don't want to say that Facebook does no good or intends to do no good. I'm just saying very simply that. When Zuckerberg says, we changed my mission statement, now we're all about this, I'm like, I don't believe you. In your business's mission statement, your business's DNA, in the DNA of Rosa Parks, it is like one of the pillars of what you do is service and helping people. That's like what's in there. That was never in there for Zuck. I'm not saying it's bad. It wasn't in there until right now.
That's not true. He added on to his statement. He added on one phrase. The first part has always been there to build community.
Yeah.
That's always been there from day one.
Okay.
And then he added four more words to it.
Four more words to it in 2017.
Yeah.
Let's see how it goes. you're very optimistic. I hear you. Speaking of which, and this is another, I'm taking a cynical approach to this as well. Facebook is entered into the television game, into the original content game. They're trying to get some of that Netflix.
To help people, bro.
Yes, exactly. To help people. They're trying to get some of that Netflix and Amazon and HBO money, subscription-based stuff. Now, the thing about that is because Facebook isn't necessarily subscription-based, you don't have to pay $9 a month to be part of Facebook. You don't have to subscribe to Facebook Prime to be part of Facebook, that stuff delivered to you. So what are they going to do to incentivize people? Obviously, we know why they want to have original content to grow their user base and keep users and keep their users satisfied and happy. But what are they going to do? And right now, they're being very competitive in the market when it comes to budgets. Some of their big scripted series, they're paying as high as $250,000 an episode for, and some of the smaller, what we traditionally considered as digital fare is more like $10,000 to $35,000 an episode. The difference is, and this is what I ask you as a creator, for the $250 an episode, they'll give you that money. You make your stuff. Let's say you make 10 episodes, whatever it is,
and
you collect your money.
Own it. And they just own as it. You were talking about offline.
Yeah, and they own it. Good for them. The other version, though, mm-hmm. they give you $35,000 an episode. Not that much money,
yeah.
But you can cook something up pretty fresh to $5,000, and you get to keep 55% of the revenue share.
Yeah, the ad rep.
That's more like it. I think. What, in your opinion, what do you think would be more profitable if you had the choice to do? Would you take the $250 and make something big and bold and keep it moving, or would you?
You're taking a chance on banking on how visible the IP is going to be. I mean, they're only throwing, but everything on Facebook don't run numbers. It's not proven that everything. I mean, I have a guy that's doing Facebook ads right now. It's getting nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He's getting no response. So, right. I mean, it doesn't prove that you're going to get a lot of spins is what I'm trying to say.
That's true.
So, I mean, you're banking on that. Like, if the content is relevant and you already have a built-in community, you have an audience that's, wanting to consume that content, then yeah, maybe that might be the best bankable thing for you to do. But $250 an episode for a scripted, I think that's decent.
Yeah.
I mean, and to be able to have the 2 billion users as something to bet against, I think that I don't know. To answer your question directly, I don't know which one I would choose. I don't know if it would be just based on what I would make or the profits. I think it would just based on the opportunity for whatever I created to get the most spins.
Yeah.
And so if it's me doing a scripted iteration or a non-scripted iteration, who knows?
Yeah, I guess it would depend on like what kind of, because what's not in there is the traditional, and this is in traditional media, you have different models. You have marketing, you have, how much money are they going to spend to promote this? These networks, traditional networks like ABC, CBS, and NBC have incredible promotion departments and do an incredible job of promoting their shows. I mean, you know exactly everything about Big Bang Theory and The Blacklist or Grey's Anatomy. They do a great job of promoting their shows, as does Fox. I don't know how Facebook, a good job Facebook's going to do promoting their shows. Netflix has got it down.
Hey, they got money. I don't think that would be an easy, a difficult thing for them
right.
to do.
Okay, well, then if they're spending the same money, if they're spending the same promotion budgets promoting these shows, then I would much rather take my $35,000 episode, make something hot, and get the full promotion budget, and have everyone know about it, and then start collecting 55% of that ad revenue money. That's got to be insane.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane if you have a grand slam piece of content where you get a lot of circulation and visibility. Yeah, that would be super profitable. I mean, because especially if it has sustainability, like if you have something that's hot that goes viral and then people tune in, weekly or daily or whatever the case may be, then yeah, you're making some paper.
Yeah, interesting to see how this plays out. But that's I like the idea of that. Moving forward, YouTube TV. Google's launched YouTube TV. They had it in a handful of places, which is here in Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, Philly, and the Bay Area, 5 cities. I tried it out. I actually liked it a lot. I thought the interface was good. I thought it worked really amazingly on my iPhone and also on my laptop, on my desktop, extreme right to your television. I thought YouTube TV worked out very. I actually liked it better than Sling. And became quite reliant on it, and I kind of I stopped paying for it. So I gotta pay for it again. I'm gonna try it. The point is, what I didn't realize is it was only in those five cities, because I'm here in Los Angeles. So expanding to 10 more cities: Atlanta, Charlotte, Dallas, Fort Worth, Detroit, Houston, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, mm-hmm. St. Paul, Dallas, and Phoenix and Washington, D.C. They're basically rounding out the rest of those top 15 markets. Yeah. I don't know. Are you messing with YouTube TV at all?
I think it's a great expansion plan. They started in the hottest markets, and then now they're going into the more, medium markets and the smaller markets, and getting all the affiliates, connecting those dots. And I think that's smart for them to do. I mean, they're slowly building their network, and as more content is developed and more people know about it, more promotion dollars are spent, I think they'll have the network and infrastructure to really roll out some dope presentation. And so I think, when you talk about them battling, the Amazons, the Netflix of the world, and even, terrestrial television, I think that this is a great step for them to do that, especially attracting, the younger generation, millennials and the alike. So I think it's smart. It's good. And it really just rests with the content. If the content has great production value, it's compelling, it's competitive, I think they're going to continue to expand. They have the money. So right. they have money to burn. So I think it's smart. It's good.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's great too. And I'm surprisingly more pro Google than I am Facebook. But I don't know. I need to really examine what my problem with Facebook is. I don't have anything smart with Zuckerberg. I got to figure this out.
Yeah, one of my boys actually does a lot of stuff for Kevin Hart, and he has his thing with YouTube, and I'm interested to see how successful, I guess, his
platform. We're talking about LOL?
Yeah. And, I think that would be interesting to see if someone with, like, a huge personality like that can be profitable and, change culture. So we'll see.
We certainly will and shall see. Moving forward, but Jeff Bezos, our guy, our Bezos, I keep saying Bezos, but he is always a disruptor. He's always shaking stuff up. He dropped one tweet, which was a little longer than 140 characters, but he did it in the form of a JPEG. And basically, it was just a tweet requesting philanthropic ideas. Mm-hmm. Like, basically, look, I'm sitting on a bunch of bees. I'm trying to do good in the world. I own Whole Foods. Mm-hmm. I own the Washington Post. I own Amazon. Blue Origin.
Twitch.
I'm just trying to do good. So how can I do good in the world? Give me some geniuses out there.
He's trying to do good, but Mark Zuckerberg is not.
I mean, I didn't get Mark Zuckerberg's tweet in my inbox.
Bro, but okay, did Mark Zuckerberg not say that 99% of his holdings he's going to get to his foundation?
The Mark Zuckerberg Foundation for what? Drones and,
nah, and health,
cash?
Health community.
All right.
Anyway.
So, I just think this was dope. He sent this out, and he got over 42,000 replies, mm-hmm. and there's some really good replies.
Why do you think this is dope? That he did it in this way versus...
Yeah, because what it boils down to, I guess, at the end of the day, is I'll just keep it 100. I believe him. I believe this. When Bezos says, give me some ideas, and someone says, hey, why don't you do this? He's like, I believe Bezos is like, sure, let's do that. When Zuck comes out talking about change it up to help to build the pool, bring the world closer together. I'm like, man. So I don't know. That's me.
No, but why did you like the way that he tried to pull people in this fashion? Why was that an attractive thing to you versus like, hey, I'm gonna just talk to my own brain trust and figure it out myself?
Because open it out to most the of the yeah, because is most of the nature of these CEO guys, the guys are really, for lack of a better term, up their own ass. They're like very much like, I have all the answers. I'm the guy. I'm the smartest guy in the room everywhere I go. I don't want to hear anything from anybody else. So when you, of course, have this incredible brain trust of whoever you could possibly get in a room to give you ideas, and you can hire whoever you want. But the idea of saying, like, I just bought Whole Foods. Like, our company's just projected to do incredible amounts of money. Like, I want to give something back. I want to hear from the people. Mm-hmm. I'm going to use the power of social to just say, give me your philanthropic ideas. And I think that A, that's dope because it shows it sort of democratizes like, you know, his philanthropy through his giant company. It also is a great PR move because he doesn't seem like just a giant CEO. Oh,
PR move.
Well, I mean, I mean, not in a bad like, oh, not in a bad word, but it's a good public relations move because he didn't seem like some CEO sitting on a hill just counting stacks. Like, he's like, I want to do something good. People help me do good. So people like give him a bunch of ideas, and I don't think he'd be like not listening to the ideas. I think he's gonna be like, oh, okay, let's find the top 10. Let's execute those because I can.
I don't think he's going to approach it that way. I do like the fact that he is trying to keep his ear to the streets, quote unquote, yeah, and like polling people. I think that's cool to show some type of connection to the people. But I don't think that, I think that he kind of already has a direction he wants to go in, or a category or space that he wants to be in.
Which is what?
This is what I'm betting. I'm theorizing that he already kind of knows. I mean, he's a smart guy. Like, I mean, he doesn't just randomly do stuff. I'm sure he's already thought about a space he wants to be in, and so I know he already shouted out a couple foundations in Seattle that he had an affinity towards. But I know the key difference is that a lot of the philanthropic I guess strategies and a lot of the foundations are doing stuff that's more like long term. His thing was he wants to do something that's more short term, right, and addressing people's needs in the now. And so I get that being the motivation for him going to Twitter. But I already think he kind of already has a plan as to what to do. That's just my thoughts.
Well, he does. I'm sure he does because he's Jeff. But not just from that area. I'm going to transition now because I agree with all that. But I'm going to transition to this new thing, which is essentially there's on CNBC.com, they have an open question as to what do we think Bezos will do next. I mean, obviously, you know, he owns you know, Zappos and Twitch and diapers and groceries and television and all kind of other stuff. What is next for him? People are suspecting media companies. Maybe he buys a studio. Maybe he buys, you know, MGM or, you know, Sony, or the studio arm of Sony, that is. What do you think is next for Bezos?
I believe that he's going to go heavy into space exploration. I feel like that's the frontier that people want to be in, colonizing Mars, you know, getting people into deeper space. And I think that, I mean, he's going to continue to, I mean, he already has that kind of company built, but I think he's going to continue to put more money into that. I think he has the cachet to be able to buy a Netflix. We talked about that before. I mean, he has the ability to acquire pretty much anything. And I think I read an article maybe a week or two ago, right when the Whole Foods acquisition happened, how they were arguing that, hey, Bezos might be, he might be getting too big where they have to break him up. He might become like a monopoly, you know, and they have to break him up. And so that's what interests me
he's
more.
Buy a power company.
But I mean, he's only number two. I think he's right behind Bill Gates as the wealthiest in the world.
You don't forget to pay your Amazon bill and your car is going to get towed.
What was that?
You'll forget to pay your Amazon bill and your car will get towed. Like, that's where he's going.
Hey.
you know, he owns everything. Like, oh, I forgot to pay my bill. Oh, good, because we forgot to deliver your food.
Exactly.
Like, you know.
We're going to starve you out.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think that, you know, media, like, he probably is feeling really, really fresh because he won that Oscar and won that Emmy. Won multiple Emmys, but won that Oscar this year with, I'm drawing a blank now.
Manchester
by the Sea. So who knows? He might want to acquire like we talked about, a media company that's cooking out a lot of content.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know. He already has the media company. So why would he do that?
I don't know. I mean, the studio is a different operation.
Hey.
No. So we'll see. We'll see how that works out.
Yeah.
Moving on to something that we went to check out. A little something called E3, the electronic, basic video game convention, and it's something that we've been doing every year, and I've been doing it for a long time, and you and I've done it together for the last 3 or 4 years. You know, there's some highlights in video game wise that I want to touch on a little bit, but overall, what did you think of the overall E3 experience this year?
E3, unlike other years, I felt was a little. It was a little less attractive. I felt like a lot of the big activations, installations, and just the presence of a lot of the video game developers and you know, platform developers, they just didn't, it didn't seem like they spent a lot of money to like give you that bells and whistles experience. And so, I mean, I know at the end of the day, people come to E3 to play the game and to listen to some of the presentations and hear some of the new reveals. But I mean, a big part of the experience is like the wow factor. And I felt like this year it didn't really have the wow factor. But some of the games like look pretty fresh. I know virtual reality was much larger, had a much larger presence this year. Obviously Nintendo had a huge space.
Yep.
That was a highlight. But yeah, like I felt like previous years I would want to spend all day there or yeah. multiple days there. Like this year it was just like, okay, I saw it, it's been an hour, it's time to go.
Yeah.
What about you? I
agree. I feel like that, yeah, there's the spectacle of what was happening. Maybe the substance was the same, but the spectacle in terms of like these giant booths and activations and cool things you can interact with and play with, and that stuff was gone. They're not spending as much money on that stuff anymore, on just the practical set building mm-hmm. aspect of it. They are still demoing games and demoing consoles, and but I don't know, man. I do miss the spectacle of E3, and I mean, and I don't think the video game industry is down because they're just making so much money. But what I think we're seeing is a lot of these large companies like EA are doing their own separate events. Like Electronic Arts did that one at the Palladium that was 3 days, like their own E3. 3 days with major talent, celebrities, and performers, and people coming through, and it was a really sort of special thing. It's like its own E3, and they released 6 major titles,
yeah.
and they all looked phenomenal.
Yeah.
So I mean, if the companies are doing it that way, I don't know what the need for one marketplace is.
Hey, I feel too. This is the first year they opened it up to the public, so maybe that had a lot to do with it. Just more. Maybe.
Well, attendance was way up.
Way more foot traffic. And so what I'm saying is maybe these companies are theorizing like, hey, you know, people are going to buy the game. Like we're hot right now. We don't got to spend this extra money for what? Like why spend extra marketing when we already know people going to be on us? Like why right. got to buy the new Jordans? I already know I'm about to get that girl.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So maybe that's what it is.
Very but who true. Knows? Well, we'll find out. We'll see how it goes next year. They got one more year of E3. Next year in Los Angeles, and then it's up for debate as to where
it'll stay here
and move to Vegas. It seems like it's going to stay here, but you know, Vegas is very, very attractive.
Yeah,
always is.
Yeah,
for everything.
And they already got, you know, most of the conventions, the big conventions yep. there, CES.
Star Trek Discovery is launching. They finally got a release date of Star Trek Discovery. It's coming out in September. I don't know the date, but you know, in September. I mean, we are connected to Star Trek a little bit. It's starting to shape up. It started off with some very, very, very rocky, tumultuous start. I've heard that the budget of this thing is way up there. And first of all, what do you think? This is from this big, gigantic bet on CBS All Access.
I mean, I think that it's smart to open it up to the whole world. I think Netflix has it, will have it internationally, but America won't. And you have the only way you can get it if you're in the States or domestically is to go through the CBS All Access and have to pay that subscription. I don't know if that's gonna work. I'm not sold on it.
Oh, wow.
Like, I don't think I would do it. So I wouldn't if I had to bet money, I would bet against them. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So. I think that, you know, in terms of the actual production and in terms of the what we're going to see as a narrative, I think it's going to be great. I think it'll be a great complement to, you know, the movies and everything that's come before. But as a strategy to be able to build out CBS All Access, not sure if it's going to work.
Huh.
And you differ?
I do a little bit. I think I don't know. You know the good. Fight seems to be doing extremely well.
What does that mean? Extremely well.
I mean, the reviews and the attention that it's gotten from that, and it seems to be, by all accounts, they also reserve the right, like Netflix, to not release any numbers.
I'm not showing you my numbers, son.
Yeah, but, you know, we'll see. I mean, these are two major properties, and they've got other stuff coming, and I don't know if they can diversify. I wonder if they'll just do things like, you know, CBS is developing Young Sheldon, sort of a spinoff of Big Bang Theory. I wonder if that's going to go on CBS All Access, if they're going to take these spinoffs of the larger shows and then put them on All Access. And maybe that's their model. I don't know, but just if you want to have that brand familiarity.
And
but,
I ask myself, where I ask you, like, what audience are they going after? You know, because you got to think, and then now, who has the jobs? Who's going to have the jobs in the next 10, 20 years? It's these young kids, and like, how is this? How are these pieces of IP going to draw them in to pay that subscription versus YouTube Red versus Spotify versus Apple versus Netflix? Like, how?
Well, I mean, look, listen, CBS is definitely a baby boomer type network. And I mean, the baby boomers are still ruling. They voted in Donald Trump. The baby boomers will not let go. Spending? Oh, they're spending a whole lot of money.
Their spending power is the same as the millennials?
Well, it's actually the baby boomers right now, and their spending power are actually greater right now than the millennials. But the point is, millennials are on the uprise, and they're uprise. The thought is that millennials have more disposable income, and they're coming as large right now as the baby boomer group. The thing about the baby boomer group is they're just huge and refuse to die. I mean, the low end is 55, the high end is 70. They still got another 20 years of dominating.
Okay.
So the question is, if you're a baby boomer and you're 60 and five, and will you switch over to the internet in 5 years and be paying a CBS All Access fee? If that's the way it goes, that's the only way to see all my shows, and I'm 65, maybe I do.
But like you said earlier, like, the whole point of TV was to deliver ads and ads for people to buy products. And so are you arguing that a person that's 60 versus a person that's 25 is spending the same amount right now, 2017?
No, you're right.
And that's my point. Like,
okay,
how is that All Access going to draw in that 25-year-old, you know?
Yeah.
I don't see it.
That makes sense. That does make sense. Okay. I'll fill you on that one. I'll just back up on that one. I don't like this last story. It's taking forever. I mean, oh, there's a couple more. I'm sorry. So I'll just mush them together. So Atari and Sega. Atari is taking a cue from the big Nintendo. Nintendo had that system that was sort of like, is it still sold out anymore?
No, they don't. I went into GameStop like maybe like a month ago, and they stopped making it. I was going to get one. So I had heard at first, like a year ago, and like in November when they launched it, it was $60 or something.
Yeah, I remember.
It sold out quick.
Sold out quick.
And so then I went into GameStop in Burbank, and they were like, hey, we still sell them, but we don't have it right now. We're getting a new order. Right. And then maybe fast forward 4 months later, I went to GameStop, and they said, nah, it's a wrap. They stopped making them.
Wow.
So big disappointment. Yeah.
I wonder what the story is behind that.
I don't know.
They could not keep up with the demand, I guess.
Maybe.
Interesting. Well, that thing was, you know, that you find those things on eBay somewhere. Find them on.
They're gonna tax that ass probably.
Oh God, imagine. Because of that, other gaming systems are taking the cue from that. Both Atari and Sega have versions of this. Have versions of, like, Atari has a version of their old school Atari console that I grew up with. I don't know if you grew up with it because it's a little after your time.
No, we had it. My parents played that.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that makes me feel young.
My parents had it. I didn't say I had it.
I was going to say, no, that makes me feel young. Got it, your parents. I'm being sarcastic. Okay, my parents played that joint. Like, good.
Got you.
I got that joint in fifth grade for Christmas in fifth grade. I was very excited about it and played that for a solid, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. And the thing about that is they're bringing that console back with all their titles in there. Now, there's versions of this. You can get computer programs and play all the Atari titles on your computer. There's even an app where you can play most of the Atari titles on your phone now. But to have that old-school console and the old-school joystick and play those things, that's tight. Sega is also doing a very similar thing. They're giving all their joints, all the way back from the Sega 16-bit to the the Sega 8-bit to the Sega Genesis 16-bit to the Sega Dreamcast, which, you know, I had all these systems, by the way, to the other Sega handheld joint, which I can't remember. I was a Sega loyalist. I had every last one of these stupid games. And the fact that all those games will be available on one system, that could be dope.
Yeah, I thought the games are available for you to download. You can download them and play them offline, or you could also play them like on your smartphone. And you just have to see the ad that runs or whatever. Like, that's what I thought.
So I'm taking forever on the Apple.
I thought that maybe I'm mistaken, but I thought
Atari or Sega.
Sega.
Sega. Yeah, I'm sorry, Sega. I'm mistaken. You are right about it. Sega is offering all those things, so you can play anytime, which is great. And that's incredible.
But Atari is the actual hard console.
Exactly. That's gonna that they're doing because that is a piece of nostalgia. That old piece of Atari thing is a piece of nostalgia. I will definitely be copping that.
But do you think I feel like that's just too niched out. I don't see 100,000 plus people buying that.
You underestimate
really?
The baby boomers and
Gen Xers. Okay.
Baby boomers and Gen Xers will, if you bought that for your dad for a Christmas gift,
he'd be like, yo.
I'm telling you, he will love it. And if he bought it for me as a Christmas gift, I'd be like, yo. like that is, baby boomers and Gen Xers will buy the crap out of that. Just like your generation sold out that stupid NES.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same thing. We'll buy that like crazy. It's a good move. Okay. Atari saw that and was like, huh. Let me just make some money real quick.
So you think it's a good move for them? You think it's going to give them life? Is that what you're saying?
No. Okay. I think it's just a good money guy. I don't know who owns Atari these days or what's happening with Atari. You know the same guy, by the way, who started Atari's, I forget his name, but basically who put that Atari console together and mm-hmm. sold it. He's a manufacturer themselves. Him and a bunch of college dudes manufactured it and sold them out. Mm-hmm. And they got a distribution deal with Sears and put it in a case and did it with Sears initially and made a bunch of money. And then they got the rights to Pong. This whole crazy story of how they got started, which was great. And then sold like crazy. Mm-hmm. He got out. Started Atari. Started a whole cultural revolution of how people do business and everything else. Got out. But the little known factor about that guy is the next thing he started, Chuck E. Cheese.
Wow. That's interesting. I didn't know.
Yeah, that. The same guy who started the Atari 2600.
That's a huge turn.
And revolutionized that business and started Chuck E. Cheese. And
wow.
That has its own problems now, but it's still around. So that's
Chuck E. Cheese used to be the slapper.
I mean, when you create two iconic brands like that, it's really interesting.
That is interesting.
There's a great podcast called How I Built This. If you guys are interested in NPR podcast, How I Built This. They have, I mean, if you're an entrepreneur and you just want those inspirational stories, I mean, everything from the guy who started Southwest to the guy who started Atari to everybody's been on there, and it's really good. Mark Cuban. So really good stories. And, like, you know, and they're all some version of, like, I was broke, I was about to give up, I sold my everything, and then
that's the inspirational quality,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, almost every one of those. Everybody was broke and about to give up and got
then
the car
boom,
possessed.
The moment happened.
So that's hope for me. And that's all I got for today, man. Anything else?
Nah, man. I mean, I know we talked about last week when Ho was dropping, and now we have a date. We have a date when he's dropping.
June 30th. Are you ready for 444?
I mean, you gonna re-up your title subscription?
I am. I was talking about this with our partner Steve, and he's just who's by the way the least tech savvy person in the world. He's like, I don't know. I'll just wait till it gets to. I'm like, I don't think it's gonna get to Apple Music.
It's not.
He's like, he's not gonna miss all the money. I'm like, you're not paying attention to what's happening. It's not happening. Like, he's like,
he already pulled his catalog.
Yeah, so, I'm re-upping my title switch. What about you?
I'm going to get it from the source.
Oh, are you getting it from the source, meaning Jay-Z, or are you getting it from China?
You're going to send me a copy.
Okay, so you're going to text Jigga, text up Hov right now, be like...
Yeah, I'm going to be like, send me the pre-release, bro.
Yes, okay.
I need that. 444.
What are your expectations from a 48-year-old Jay-Z?
Hey, man, I think he still has it. I mean, bro, like, we're in the mumble rap era. Like, come on. Like, he's going to give us something. The music's going to be crazy. I don't know. I haven't really done much research on it. I don't know who's been producing it, but I already know that, I mean, he's not going to make any dumb moves creatively. So,
and this album's been ready for, like, almost 2 years. So
I am interested to see if it's going to be feature heavy or if it's just going to be him, you know?
Yeah.
And if it's just him, I'm rooting for it just being him. It's a solid Jay-Z album where he's actually spitting. I love that it's conceptual. I love that in fact he's doing videos like his wife did. And the whole album is kind of like laid out that way. Have you seen the trailer?
Nope.
Oh, the trailer looks fresh.
Whoa.
It looks super fresh.
Okay.
Yeah, the trailer to the first song, rather.
Okay. Is it everywhere? Or is that
it's
on
everywhere.
Title?
Okay. He dropped that with the news.
Okay, like, I missed that. Yeah. I've only seen the bus backs and the billboards.
But that looks fresh.
It's a fresh rollout, I will tell you that. The rollout is, everything is right.
Yeah, yeah.
I just saw a bus back roll by.
Mm-hmm.
And, there it is. You know?
So, yeah, he's flat. I mean, I love what he's doing. I mean, he's always expanded, but I love how he's expanding into, like, the television space, producing documentaries, and now he's, you know, dropping an album with visual content. It's almost like a film chopped up, you know? So
yeah.
I'm interested to see how that pans out, but... We'll see, man.
All right.
Next week.
I'm very excited about it. Next week, we got that coming. And also, two albums did drop this week. Three. One dropped last week, two this week. I'm going to ask you about first being Vince Staples. Do you care or not?
Oh, yeah. Vince Staples. I mean, in terms of the newer guys, like, I mean, he's definitely up there. I haven't given it a full listen, though.
Okay. I haven't either. I've only half listened. Number two, your boy Khaled.
I have not given it a listen at all. Like,
okay.
I've listened to obviously the singles that, you know, he's dropped, but I haven't. It's not something I'm gonna run into my phone to listen to. But I mean, I'll give it a fair shake.
Yeah, you know? I downloaded it. I haven't really checked.
I'm sure
it out
it's
yet,
good though.
But we'll see. And last but not least, last week, very quietly. Not so quietly. It's some promotion. Big Boy dropped. I actually like that. I like that album a lot.
Are yeah, I haven't listened to that one either.
Okay, that one's actually pretty good.
Is Andre on there?
No oh, Andre at all.
Damn.
Three Killer Mikes, though.
Stop it. That's it. That's why you listen to it?
Three Killer Mikes, a couple Jeezys.
Oh, man.
He's going Atlanta heavy, but a couple Jeezys, Three Killer Mikes, no Migos, no other Atlanta folks, no Luda, no, you know, no nobody else, no JD, no most ballin'est player.
Did you see All Eyes on Me yet?
I have no intention of seeing All Eyes on Me.
You're terrible, bro.
You just told me it was whack.
Whatever. We're going to pause that. We're going to pause that conversation.
I have no idea. Like, I can't get you to see John Wick. I'm going to go. I saw it. I will like you. I will wait until it comes okay. to. I will see it.
Okay.
I'm going to see it, but I don't know if I'm going to stop and go down to theater.
I'm not going
to. Plunk down my 1250, whatever it is, to go see.
I'm not going to criticize you on air.
A whack movie. Go ahead.
I'm not going to criticize you on air. I'll wait until we go up, until we pull the plug, and then I'm going to tell you why.
You just spent money to go see whatever.
No, whatever. I'm not going to do you like that.
No, do me. I should support?
I feel we should support black films.
Okay, fair. That's fair. Okay.
Black director, you know, I mean,
okay,
just for that alone, okay. Like we as a group, because we don't get that shot very often.
I mean,
a $40 million budget, we don't get that shot, bro. So I mean, to get those numbers up, it helps us. It helps us all out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I will go see. I've supported that. You know, Tim's story's whack. Fantastic Four films, so both of them. So I will definitely go. I will definitely go support this. But yeah,
okay, fair enough. I got you.
It's all good, man. Everybody can't be Fuqua and Coogler, or Barry Jenkins. So okay, I feel it. I'm gonna check it out.
That's very true, though.
All right, or Ava DuVernay.
Man, she's killing it.
She's killing it. I'm really excited about Wrinkle in Time. Okay, I will check it out for that purpose. You're right. I will check it out and just you know, enjoy the music. all right, we're gonna get out of here on that one. Where can the people find you?
Yo, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE.
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Joe K. Braswell. That's at Joe K. Braswell. We will see you next week with some reviews, and maybe I'll see All Eyes on Me, and we'll go from there. All right. Bye-bye.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio. Instagram me at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
So much.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.